Welcome to Crypto Talk Radio, the podcast for everyday investors like you. Visit us on the web at cryptotalkradio.net. And now, here's your host, Leister.
Thank you for that, Bailey, and welcome everybody out there on Crypto Talk Radio, found at cryptotalkradio.net. I was born by the river in a little tent. Not really, but that's kind of the message, because some people, they come from impoverished or challenged or difficult pasts and households. Welcome, or welcome back, whichever your situation is. My jingle does need to change. I need to get Bailey back on deck to redo the jingle, because we are CryptoTalk.fm, and that's part of my personal update. There's two parts. One, I'm building up a new site. I'm actually building a new, brand new site for Crypto Talk Radio. And there's some, you know, it's not going to be completely different from the other one, but it's got a little bit of cooler vibe, more control. I actually debated self-hosting my audio. Right now it's hosted on a product platform. And I don't necessarily have any beef with them per se, but I was thinking maybe I just host my own since we're doing the out of cycles. Maybe. I have not committed this. It's just in my mind of whether I do it, because my service, it does the whole nine. I have my own hosting. I have my own storage. I have unlimited bandwidth. Getting storage is cheap. I get, you know, it creates the RSS feed. I would have my own self-hosted feed. There's all sorts of benefits, plus control, avoiding Podcast One nonsense. I'm not on Podcast One, never will be, but I'm saying. I'm not on Sirius XM, never will be, just saying. Avoiding it, avoiding the risk that it could happen. I'm still banding that about, so I haven't decided, just, you know. The other part, so I went out to check this house out, because I'm considering buying a home. This will be the second time I've actually committed to buying a home. I've gone through the process like four times. There was two homes in California that I was going through, and actually, ironically, the one that I was about to pull the trigger on looks very similar to the one I've got now. But the difference, this freaking home, it's butt ugly. Don't get me swid. It's butt freaking ugly. They were doing some enhancements. You know, they've been doing upgrades. So it's not like they left it. But it's just butt ugly. It's butt ugly outside. It's butt ugly inside. It's tiny. The rooms are tiny. The ceiling, geez, I could reach up and my elbow touch the ceiling. It's short. But land, bro, land. Freaking land. Doot, doot, doot. Damn near half an acre of land, just wide open land. They cut down all the excessive trees. It's a beautiful freaking plot. And so I said, okay, I can pretty this guy up. He just needs some TLC, really, and I could trick it out, and let's say I do. Like, there's what's called a mudroom in the front, and if you don't know a mudroom because you're not in the United States or don't live in, like, the Midwest or the South, a mudroom is that room that you might see in some places where it's designed for people to drop their muddy shoes or their wet jackets or something. It's like a entryway. In traditional, like on the West, it's like just a regular porch. You know, it might be a covered porch or a patio, but mudroom is actually an enclosed space. Now, I don't like it. I understand the thought. I don't like it. I think it's overkill, because you could just do a covered porch and it's the same damn thing, but it's airy. It's lit, you know. So that's something I got to look at. It's stucco. I don't mind stucco, but it's that ghetto kind of stucco, not the good kind of stucco. So I got to figure that out. And I was testing the texture and it seems like it's unfinished. Like, it's not the kind of, I'm used to stucco. I grew up around stucco. I know what stucco should look like when it's clean and done night. This looks like they didn't even stucco it, like it's actually the concrete underneath it. That's when I say it's butt ugly as all get out. But again, it's the freaking plot of land. Damn near half an acre of this business. It's a perfect rectangle square. It's got really nice grass. They took care of the grass. They did upgrade two of the bathrooms. They upgraded the master. So it's got potential. It's got AC. It's got furnace, which is unusual for this area. And it's got a massive freaking garage, to the point I could slice that bad boy in half and still have a larger garage than most of you listening to this. So, wow. I pulled the trigger. I just signed the docs to put the offer in. The money's already situated. So now we're going to go through the process of this. Got to do an inspection. The agent didn't see anything. I didn't see anything. The windows suck. I'll have to replace the windows, but I do that anyway because there's a train nearby. It's not like my place in Washington where the train is down a hill, though. Here, it's at least on a flat, so I'm not too worried about it. But I'm going to have to swap all the windows out. Damn sure going to need to redo the interior, like, all the way around. Like, it doesn't have any, there's no crown molding. There's no, it's just generic paint. Like, they did a base level of paint that sucks. The bathrooms are uninspiring. I can see they did work, but I'm not sold on what they did. Like, they could have gone further. The laundry room is combined with one of the bathrooms to save on piping, probably. I don't like that, especially because you have an upstairs area that easily could be a bathroom if you took the time to repipe it. It's in the same wall, so it's not like too much movement. And then the second bedroom is so freaking short. I have to say it's probably 6.5 feet. So it's nothing. And so that's probably what drove other buyers away, because I was the only one. I was the only offer for these. And so I played hardball. And just talked to the agent, said, what's a fair number? I don't want to rip them off, but I'm going to have to do some work on this, dude. All the doors. When we say work, okay, these doors have to be from like 1920. It's like the original, you know, the doorknobs that are like the ghetto fake jewel type doorknobs that have the little key underneath it. That's what we're talking. And they're like rickety, falling apart wood. Just the most horrific. I'm telling you, it's a butt ugly place. Its only saving grace is the plot of land and the garage. The garage is amazing. The plot of land is amazing. And that was enough for me because I figured, okay, let's play hardball in the house. We're going in with $15,000 off of their asking. So, hey, you're not getting any offers here. Let's play hard. If you don't want to take it, I'll walk. But I do want it because that plot, I could do a hell of a lot with it. Then things are spinning for my studio, sunroom setup, you know, all sorts of crazy, almost swore, things I could do. I could literally slice the garage in half. This is how bad it is. I could slice the garage in half, but just evenly in half, take what's remainder on the right side, slice it in half the long way, and use the upper part as my office, like, and just do a glass front, and it would be bigger, like, by twice or three times what I'm in that now. It's nuts. So that's in debt. That's on process. So the reason I told you that story, I may be in and out. That's why it was good for me to shift the schedule, because I may be in and out as I get all this sorted. Apparently it's a much slicker process than it used to be, where I had to ride all over town. So I'm working out the nuts and bolts. The money's already situated. I've already confirmed it. I just have to do the paperwork and the earnest and then the inspection. And as long as everything's kosher, then I got to figure out the moving and then my storage. I have to clear out my storage that's over here, get all my stuff up over there. Storage is paid to July, so I'm not too worried about it. But I got to get all the stuff up there. It's coming with appliances, so I got to figure out what to do with my washer dryer, my nice washer dryer, if I take and I trash the shit that's in there, or if I use mine. Instead, I don't know. I got to brain this out, assuming this all works. Now, this isn't guaranteed they're going to accept my offer. I will tell you, if they don't accept my offer, they're kind of foolish, because I get the sense, based on my walkthrough of this place, I'd be shocked if anybody would offer on this home, because it's just butt ugly. Like, it's so much. It's not like for the money I make, it's not that bad. But for somebody else that just wants to have a nice place to stay, it's butt freaking ugly. It's way worse physically than where I am. But mentally, my spot now where I'm thinking, where I want to be, it's close to perfect. It's got opportunity. It's not a fixer. It just needs some TLC. It's you can tell they tried to do some stuff and they did do the worst of it, like the air conditioning and the furnace. That's like some of the worst stuff. Didn't do the windows, which makes no sense. Left the mudroom, which makes no sense to me. The garage is massive when they could have renovated that. The garage is not connected to the home. They could have renovated that. But the lawn is pristine. It's just a nice general area. And then the only downside is that it's, you know, it's right near a train. But it seems like the train doesn't have too much noise ingress. So I can tell why people turned it away. The rooms are small. The bedroom, what they call jokingly bedrooms, are tiny. They're really small. They're smaller than where I'm at now. So I can understand, having seen it, why people turned it away. I'm looking at it as an investment property. I'm going to be living in it for sure. after I fix the fucking doors, because that's not going to fly, bro. You know, the guy was struggling to open the doors. That's not going to work. I basically had to swap the doors and swap the windows before I can even consider, you know, moving into this dude. That at minimum, those have to be fixed. Once those are fixed, then I got to get carpet because they ripped all the carpet out throughout. I got to get the carpet. That's got to be in there. Sorry, I'm a carpet guy, not a hardwood. Once I get that done, then I can look at and say, okay, let's take a look at this and try to move in. Then I got to figure out my studio space, whatever that's going to look like. And I'm not sure. I'm struggling this. So I've got a lot on deck. Let's talk some cryptocurrency real brief. And I've got not a guest, but there's a video I watched inspired me to talk about some theories this person put forward about what may be happening that you might be seeing with some of these crypto folks. And I apologize for taking so long for the personal updates this episode, but I thought it was important. Number one, number two, it ties very nicely into everything else that's going on and what will be happening that I've got planned on deck. Okay, Coindesk.com. Let's zoom out to the month chart. Let's start with Ethereum because it has less chaos going on. On the month chart, Ethereum is hovering ever steady, but trending downward. Downward pressure. It didn't crap, but it's trending on the way downward. A high of 3,100, a low of about 3 grand, hovering about just shy of the 3,100 mark as I record this. And again, trending on the downward. It's downward focused. There's a little bit of bearish intent that trickled in. I'm going to be talking about some comments that made me chuckle on a different article. Bitcoin, meanwhile, is roughly about the same, a high of 64 grand, a low of 62, just shy of 62 grand, hovering about the 64 grand mark, recovered nicer than Ethereum did. It's not trending as same downward, but it's certainly not trending upward. There's a general bearish overall sentiment going on with both of them. Now, here's what's I find funny in analysts. Analysts will tell you and have told you spot Bitcoin ETF is going to take us to the next level. They've also told you that the halving is going to take us to a next level. They've told you that these catalysts will take us to the next level. I do believe that the halving is going to result in some price appreciation. I do believe that spot Bitcoin ETFs took us to a point. I do believe that spot Bitcoin ETFs have a way to go. It's still young. I do believe that positive is going to happen, just not yet. And I think this is a theory that a lot of people are just spitballing, myself included. Mine is more gut instinct, right? It's sentiment driven, mostly sentiment driven. I do look at charts, but sentiment plays more of a strength factor for me than the technicals of it. Because I've watched projects, I've actually tried to help projects where based on the graph, there's no reason this damn thing should not be going to the moon. But the sentiment was just so terrible because of damage done early to the project, it was never able to go on the run that the technicals said that it should. In other words, the technicals seem to have one caveat to them all, and that is you can say all up and down that this should go this way and it should do this and it should be that. At the end of the day, no matter what you say, it's going to do what it's going to do. And sometimes that doesn't necessarily match what you think it should do. Sometimes it's just going to do whatever it feels like doing, as suck as that is. The analysts out there who make these calls, I do feel that some of them are spitballing simply on the technicals. And then after the fact, when they get it wrong, they're shifting gears. I'm not suggesting that they're purposely misleading you. I'm suggesting that they're just guessing like the rest of us are doing. So a lot of the people said, no, we're going to 70 grand. We're going to the moon. Well, we hit 70 very briefly and then it went back down. After it goes back down, the analysts come out and saying, you know what? I'm not so confident in this. And, you know, risky assets are having a problem here. We're going to be some corrections and the inflation. So they have to come up with an excuse. And it's not like they're wrong. I'm saying that it's after the fact. Like you said, it's going to go to 70, okay? And you were confident it's going to keep on going, yeah? And you said that the Bitcoin ETFs were going to keep us going up. You said all these things to drive up, in a sense, FOMO. And so that's a pump and dump scheme, if that's what you're talking about. You said all these things, and then once it hit the 70 and it starts going down, then you turn bearish. Now, I'm not criticizing if you're bearish for your own reasons. But a lot of you, if you're listening, a lot of you who have a lot of credibility or you're on platforms like a Forbes or a Motley Fool or some of these other ones, when you say these things, you are partially influencing the market, and maybe you don't realize that you're doing that, but you're influencing the market. You say these things, triggering the FOMO run as we see, dumps happen, then you trigger the bearish saying, oh, we're done, the end is near. You're part of the problem, bro. I don't know if you realize that, but you're part of the problem when you do that. I'm not suggesting you're being malicious. I'm saying that many of you might just simply be ignorant about the impact that you are having on the market overall. And perhaps some of the crazy dumps that we're seeing ever recently is exacerbated by some of your coverage. I can't say for sure. I'm calling out an observation, which I have the right to do because it's my show. I would rather some of you shut the hell up. And you can even say, I'm looking at the technicals and the technicals seem to indicate X, Y. I'm looking at sentiment and sentiment seems to point in the direction of A, B. That's great. You're just making an observation. But some of you straight up say, we're going to 70,000, deep, deep, deep. And then it goes to 70 and you're like, yeah, you know, and then it goes down and you're saying, the end is near. It's like you're riding a wave of groupthink. That's what it is. And then you're forcing other people by way of your groupthink methodology to follow along with what you're saying. That doesn't add credibility to you. What it does is it damages the business and makes you look like a fucking idiot. And so I wish some of you would stop doing that. I don't mind if you frame it in the form of an observation, a general observation, with the caveat that you might very well be wrong. It's when you don't position that tail end part of might be wrong, where you're presenting it as if you are some expert in a craft. You might be an expert in some craft that has to do with currency, but with cryptocurrency, the bottom line is the vast majority of you are spitballing and throwing off an opinion. The opinion's fine, but you're not quantifying it to say, I don't know for sure that this is really what's going to happen. To help people that are watching you and using your advice as a guidepost, and so many of them are probably getting wrecked and then they get frustrated. And I'll be talking about that a little bit later on. There's a lot of venture capital floating around. When I say floating around, I mean not buying into cryptocurrency. They're floating around. They're sitting around waiting, you know, like buzzards. They're waiting to try to figure out what are they going to put their money into next. You see a lot of projects doing these pre-sales left and right, and that's great, but I think there's more to this in terms of the opportunity and the opportunists out there. And the money that they're not directly putting money in. So a lot of these venture capitalists are looking for the next big thing. They're looking for something that is already a level of successful. They're looking at something that doesn't really need their money. Their money is kind of the kickover to take it to the next level. So if you think about this, what are we talking about? We're talking about if you get this new blockchain that's spinning up. A blockchain that's spinning up is untested. We don't know where it's going to go. We don't know if it's going to succeed. It's a risk, right? And you're, as a venture capitalist, you're taking on a significant amount of risk. So you might look for other venture capitalists buying in and you just groupthink and ride along that train. But a lot of these people, they're looking for projects that are already established. They already have velocity behind them. They're already well-intentioned. They're already en route. They've already got strong buy-in across the board to mitigate the risk of what they have, right? No problem. But it's rare for that to happen because I would argue, in my personal opinion, you could have thousands and thousands of projects all over the place. And of those thousands, you might have one or two that are able to get to that point without the initial injection of venture capital funds. Many of them would have to be started by said venture capital companies to begin with. If you think of Hedera was backed and sponsored by big players fresh out the gate. It wasn't able to get to a level of success similar to other blockchains. That doesn't mean it won't be. I'm saying that up front, it takes time for it to get to a level of success that makes it worth a new venture capitalist coming in being worth putting money into these things. So as people are stepping back with their money, good thing, they're stepping back and saying, well, let's take this a different approach. Let's think of this a little bit different and try to consider what is the next killer app and where can we find it? And perhaps we just need to drive that innovation because it's not directly out there. In comes the telecom industry. The telecom industry, you know what it is. You're holding it in your hand if you're holding a cell phone. The telecom industry has been around for decades, countless of them, and it has to do with everything that it takes in order to communicate from A to B. So I'm referring to phone calls, I'm referring to text messages, I'm referring to even, you know, other types of messaging. I'll even include email in it to some limited degree. Other services that are provided by the telecom companies to customers. There's a whole infrastructure that makes all that work. The infrastructure is physical. It's also software. There's some hardware, as in computers. There's people. There's all these different components that make that work. Telecom, by and large, the switching, right? The network routing, the IP addresses. There's all these different things that go into it that have never advanced beyond a certain point. The telecom industry has largely been centralized around big players. The big players have consolidated over time, certainly, but you still have big players in place. At a time, there used to be what was called Pacific Bell. There used to be what was called Charter, which is now Spectrum. You have AT&T, which used to be SBC, which used to be Pacific Bell, Bell South, et cetera, so on. You have China Mobile. I have a bad story about that one. China Mobile, Deutsche Telekom, multiple different organizations who control these networks, the telephony networks. And if you wanted to, let's say you wanted to set up your own mobile carrier, there's a whole different layer involved in setting up a secondary mobile carrier. So you think about Boost Mobile. Boost Mobile, as a prepaid service provider, used to be the prepaid service that was backed by Nextel. Nextel was bought out by Sprint. Okay, you get AT&T, which is wireless, what it is. AT&T, of course, used to be SBC, but you also had Pac Bell PCS. You had Sprint PCS, which is a completely different something. You had all these different ones, and then the prepaids over top. And then T-Mobile's off to the side. But then the prepaids are floating out around there that sit over top of these large players. And what happens is they will go to these large players and they pay to get on their network. In the olden days of landlines, you would actually have these other service providers who would offer internet service, DSL usually, and they'll offer it to you, like say an Earthlink, for example, but really they're just buying spectrum, quote unquote, from these large players. The large players still control all the chips. If you go and you set up directly with the large player, what's the process? Well, you walk into a store usually, you talk and you pick out a phone. Now, Leister here at CryptoTalk.fm doesn't do this, but you go in, you shop for a phone that seems like what you want. You charge a ripoff fee for said phone, usually to the tune of about $1,600 or some odd. They'll say, hey, would you pay it monthly? You pick a plan. And of course, the plan is how you're paying for the phone and paying for the service with unlimited text messages and a data cap on your internet and all this other stuff, right? So this is how you get access to these services. Well, brilliant people said, you know, what if somehow, and I stress in quotes somehow because this isn't really a full thing, somehow we can leverage the power of blockchain in order to run infrastructure to provide users the ability to create their own network, their own infrastructure. You can create your own hotspot that literally is yours. You can set up community-driven networks. You can have your own provider and not have to pay some central something. If you're shaking your head like, how can they do that? Don't feel alone, because you should, because this is a very lofty thing, but it's an example of the kinds of things that catch the eye of venture capital funds. Because it's, okay, you're trying to disrupt something that's longstanding, where there's a lot of money. If you think of the billions and billions of dollars that gets thrown into the telecom industry, and you were able to just take a fraction of that money, You talk about $25 billion that you could take away from this. That's enticing to them. The chance that you could do this, even if it's a remote chance, because this kind of thing, consider, you have to have really smart leadership to pull it off. It isn't even the technology. I argue the technology is insufficient. But setting that aside, you got to have smart people to pull it off from a business perspective. And then think about the regulatory landscape. The whole telecom industry is heavily regulated all the way down to the nth. And part of the reason it's regulated is think about what it meant before the era cell phones. Spam calls, right? You get junk calls. You got junk voicemails. You probably still get junk text messages. Well, now, if everybody has their own infrastructure, what does the regulatory climate look like? And how are you able to control and corral it to make sure it doesn't get out of control? So I'm saying, I saw that and I think, well, you got to have some really brilliant people to be able to pull this off. I'm not suggesting it's impossible, but you got to have brilliant people to pull it off. And if they're able to do so, it's a huge disruption to everything that we know of regarding telephony, everything, text messages, hotspots. Imagine, think about it, and I'm spitballing. Imagine a world where they're able to pull off technology that lets us embed our own, literally own, service provider into our car. It's ours. We manage it. We run it. We own it. It's our, quote, node. And we have the ability to install it in our car to provide internet access that is ours. Because consider, if it's our own internet and installed in our own car, certainly we're not going to be able to resell that. But what it does let us do is it allows us to ensure that we always have access to that internet service. I would call back and say, pump the brakes a little bit, because there still has to be some hardware running somewhere to make all this work, no matter what you do. Where's that hardware going to be? Because the hardware is very expensive to run the infrastructure today. When you talk T3 networks, it's very expensive. So how are you going to pull that off? Even if you can get blockchain to handle the ledger part of things, you still have to have hardware to make things work. Where is that going to come from? I'm saying if they can pull it off, imagine the value to the individual, because we no longer have to live in a world of having to scramble and settle to some third-party provider to give us crap internet for a pretty decent chunk of change. Hotspots. Imagine a world where we can have our own hotspot that we're assured that we're going to have without having to pay for it. It's all pipe dream, lofty vision, but it's enticing to think of the potential of what that could mean. I am not telling you it's going to be a thing. I'm telling you that these are ideas that are being brought to the table where they think that there's an opportunity to do this. I think if they do pull it off, we're years away from it. Way, way long, you know, minimum 10 years away. So in the meantime and in between time, like the song says, you're going to have to tolerate what we're dealing with right now. It's fine. It's perfectly okay. I'm causing the cogs to turn about what the future may hold for cryptocurrency long after we're all gone. Now, 2 points. One, I'm going to be talking about this garbage known as Cytochain. And I know some people don't like when I refer to it as garbage. I can only refer to it as garbage because of what the devs did. If you don't know what Cytochain is, kudos to you first, but Cytochain is what used to be Saitama Ingyu, run by the cult leader Russ Armand, and then Russ stepped down. Manny the Hitman, Manpreet Kohli, I believe is his name, took over. He was always in there, but he took over. Rebranded it Cytochain from Saitama Inu. And then this garbage, I say, because he pulled it, they did the airdrop through PancakeSwap. So basically they did BNB tokens to everybody who was a holder. Then they yanked the liquidity for one of the pairs off of PancakeSwap. The reason I say he's an idiot, is because at the end of the day, when you do certain wallets and you're looking for prices on the Binance Smart Chain, the wallets, you know, Trust Wallet and all the other ones, they key off of PancakeSwap's liquidity to understand the price on the BNB. Very few of them are integrated with the CYTA Pro, which is where the pair is. And so what it would translate to visibly when you looked at it is inklings of a rug pull. And I was reassuring people, it didn't rug pull. The guy's just a fucking idiot. That was it. And I had people jump down my throat swearing that I'm just overly emotional. I'm not emotional. I don't like people doing the wrong thing after a pattern of screw-ups. You take over and the first thing you do is the wrong thing. You don't do the right thing, which is to acknowledge that you had a pattern of screw-ups that failed. November 13th Vegas event was a screw-up. Call out who screwed it up and then say, we're back on track. We're going to get this token fixed. This FANG crap's off the table right now. We're not worried about CYTA Realty right now. We're not worried about CYTA Logistics. The main token, we're going to take care of you guys. He didn't do that. It's his token. I don't really care. But I happen to notice something. After all this flack from people, where they swear blockchain is supposed to, because they're going to apparently make a layer zero blockchain, and they said once the blockchain launches, it's going to go to the nuts moon, doot, doot, doot. Well, the blockchain allegedly launched yesterday, and all we see of the evidence of this is the site. They have a CYTA scan or whatever. And it changed from testnet to mainnet. Now, the testnet was already there. That's fine. And in the mainnet, just the wording. But I wanted to use this as an educational point. This and then the other one I'm going to be talking about as educational points to wrap it up. If you don't understand with blockchains, the success of blockchain is predicated on three main things. Not only these three, just three main things. One, utility. When I say utility, it's beyond what the blockchain itself does. It's that things are using the blockchain. There's actual activity taking place from things that are developed on the blockchain that make it work. This is the reason, the primary reason that ICP, Internet Computer, took off initially, because when that thing launched, there was a lot of activity. That activity has dwindled off. Solana, by and large, its price movement has been correlated to activity, and it was not able to keep up. It crashed again, just like it did way before. If you think about Binance, BNB, the Binance Smart Chain, BSC, I should say, the Binance Smart Chain has crazy amounts of applications. It's one of them. It's arguably the second most popular at this point behind Ethereum in terms of these, and Ethereum, of course. CYTA Chain, all they focused on so far are their own applications. The problem is that they've not sold the vast majority of them out there on why they should build on these tools or why they should use these tools. And because of the failures that have happened previous, you're talking coke binge this and cheated on wife this and Faltron this and just drama after drama after nonsense after drama. You have that history, that baggage follows you. That's the problem. So you spin up a thing and you've got this baggage following you that you never resolved and you never confronted. Instead, you're just trying to, as all of them do, turn face and just move forward. When what really should happen is you acknowledge the screw ups, acknowledge it. This person screwed up, this screwed up, we screwed up here, da da da. And then what are you going to do about it? Now that you acknowledge the screw up, how are you going to move things forward? They didn't do any of that stuff. I don't know why. But they weren't willing to do any of this stuff. So here we are. The blockchain launches, okay? So you have utility that's not, it's lacking. It's not really there, okay? The second is word of mouth awareness. Word of mouth awareness for Saitama was widespread. For CYTA Chain was not. So they're essentially starting over. That may not be a bad thing. The point is that the moment that people connect the dots back to Saitama, they're going to hear about that baggage and it's going to tank the damn thing. Okay. A way around this connects to the third, which is basically accessibility, availability, being on central exchanges, as all of the other ones are. Tron's on a central exchange, Solana's on a central exchange, BNB's on central. CYTA Chain would need to be on a vast array of central exchanges, which increases awareness and availability as well as volume and traffic. Them pulling out of PancakeSwap for the one pair is not a good start. Now, perhaps they do central exchanges later. I'm saying that I feel personally that should have been their core focus. Because if you do that first, then you talk about launching the blockchain later, I feel like it would have done a better, it would have been a better approach to getting where you're trying to go. I know they did a mass amount of burns. I saw that. And perhaps that's a precursor to the central exchanges. I never said that they were not going to get on exchanges. I said he doesn't want it to succeed if he's yanking the pair from PancakeSwap, which to people on that chain, it looks like a rug pull. That's what I said. You're not supposed to be on less exchanges. You're supposed to be on more if you want the thing to grow. That's a common thing. Like, I'm not saying something about him. That's just general rule 101. So that's your lesson today. I can't tell you. The blockchain launched, but as I told that person or people, it's not about blockchain. The blockchain don't cut it. You've got to have other things. It doesn't really matter. And we are arguably saturated with blockchains at this point. To the point, even Solana, which had its pump, has lost some of that velocity and they went right back to Ethereum. You know why? Because Ethereum runs that roost. It's the king. And it's always going to be the king. And there's nothing wrong with this. We shouldn't turn them away simply because the gas is expensive. We know it's expensive and they're working to fix it and maybe they will someday. Maybe Sidechain will get to a point that it runs. And I said, you call me back once it hits $2. Well, I ran some prediction numbers. As I can tell, for Sidechain to hit $2, the vast majority of people listening on the show right now won't be alive at that point because it would take roughly 30, maybe 40 years. That's assuming it's still around and assuming, you know, maybe Manny's not around. It would take a long time for it to hit that or something significant by way of a catalyst for that to shift. And that's the form of central exchanges. Central exchanges, I do think, given its current supply and given more increased awareness across the board, can help it get to that point. Now, with the fiasco that happened with the fake news listing that they did, who knows? Maybe they burned bridges. I don't know this. I'm giving you this educational feedback to understand this is why when these devs go off and just do a thing and they're not listening when people tell them, why don't you just do this over here? And they just ignore all that feedback. This is the kind of shit that can happen. A project that might actually have had some traction, because if you think about it, if we hadn't had the cult leader and all the nonsense with the cult, it might have been something. Consider what it might have been if he wasn't in the way. Consider what it might have been if they hadn't focused on this other garbage that's out there. Now, the other educational piece, and hopefully this is truly educational. There is a person, I would refer to him as an influencer. I don't think he refers to himself as an influencer. I would refer to him as an influencer. His name's Hotep Jesus. He's on Twitter, at Hotep Jesus, I believe it is. He is the one, that, and this is how I first encountered him a long time ago. So what happened is Joe Rogan, and you might have seen the news about this, Joe Rogan, there was a video that got scrounged up where somebody spliced in a bunch of different segments where he was using the N-word. And people were attacking him, canceled Joe Rogan. He was having issues with his platforms because of this video that came out of nowhere of these old things. Joe Rogan came out and said, no, I feel disgusted seeing it. It's disgusting, right? People wouldn't let it go because cancel culture, right? Others came out and said, well, wait a minute. What about when Joe Biden, because if you didn't know, Joe Biden's been around since, you know, Sodom and Gomorrah. So he was on video, actually up in Congress, using the N-word. And then people are like, well, that's different. He was reading a quote. Well, no. No. Joe Rogan was quoting. So it's the same thing. If one's quoting, the other's quoting. You can't, don't. That's a Chewbacca, right? So Hotep Jesus had done a video that basically said two Joes said the N-word. And it's a hilarious video. Because if you ever get a chance to track that, I do recommend it. But he is in cryptocurrency. And I was watching, and he does lives, and he spends time. He's one of those down-to-earth type of YouTube folks. He's not like the crazy ones, the nutcases. He's down-to-earth. He's just like, you're just watching a guy talk to you, essentially. And he does pieces where he's sharing an opinion. He does educational pieces. He does coverage on the cryptocurrencies he does. He does chat interactions. As far as a flow, I really like the way he comes at it. Now, in one of the episodes, I think it was 3 days ago, he was talking about how the algorithm seemed like it was costing him, you know, he had lost like 40. He's got like 80,000 subs, so I don't know why he's worried about 40, honestly. you're always going to have a flux because YouTube will do what it does. But he was trying to figure out, and he was actually pulling up graphs and numbers, and why am I losing 40 subs? And the thing is, he doesn't or didn't, I think he knows now, YouTube's algorithm biases towards essentially people that are competing with TikTok. So they want to see videos that are less than 6 minutes. Obviously, if you know people on YouTube, you can't get anything out of that crap. You're not getting any enrichment. You're not getting any education. You're not getting anything that betters you as a person. It's just garbage. Just like TikTok is nothing but garbage. And these young people that say that's where they get their news, that's why they're all fucked up now. So the point is, YouTube's algorithm slanting towards these short videos is the antithesis of what anybody wants. So I was like, Hercules, when Hotep was like, you know, F you, YouTube. Because anybody that's heard me has heard me say the same thing. That's why I don't do YouTube, and I swore off of them. My podcast synchronized there, but that's a freebie. That's free advertising. It's not like spending time giving them money, knowing they're going to bias away from my stuff. And many of the people on YouTube have lost views. If you notice their times, they've lost views. They've lost all sorts of stuff. If they have lengthy educational videos, if they have short trigger headline garbage, those are the ones that skyrocket. Or it's some trash, you know, like I saw one where this guy took Mentos and Coke and put it in a toilet, and then that one gets millions and millions of views. That's what I'm saying is these are people, usually young people, that are sitting at some job where they should be working hard, and they're watching this garbage instead of doing work. That's why they want them short, because they want to kind of quick get it in there because they're bored instead of being enriched and being empowered. Well, Hotep called out a cycle, a vicious cycle, race baiting cycle. And one of the points he called out, and I want to talk about as I close, he talked about the concept of influencers, grifters, politicians as kind of one group together, grifters. The idea that you've got these people who essentially are being, they're like figureheads for misinformation and misdirection. And when you have these cryptocurrencies that are going or they're trying to get them to go, like pump and dump type things, these people, they build up a following, right? And the following is usually based on garbage that they did in some point in the past. What happens is then some of these other rich mother fathers over here, they partner up with these influencers in order to do what? Influence you. And by you getting on their side, then when they cover some garbage token, you're tempted to get in because you trust them. And then what happens? Turns to a rug pull or a pump and dump. You know where I'm going with this. That was the vast array of 2021. You know it's the truth. And part of 2022, you know it's the truth. That's what was happening. And to some degree still happens. But what you don't realize is the influence that it's having upon you and why it's a thing and why it's so powerful is because very rich mother fathers are spitting this. They're using those people downstream to convince those. And it's even worse when they convince these girls who are moderately to greatly attractive to essentially sell ass to get you to buy in to some crap project. Because that happens too. So my call to action to you guys, and it's up to you if you ignore Leister, right? Just come back and get my credit when I'm proven right. My call to action to you, the next time you're listening to anybody on YouTube, any podcast, if you're watching something on TV, if you're watching something on a social media platform, the next time you see somebody who has a significant number of followers who is telling you about some token, I want you to, all I'm asking is that you really drill into why they think this project is going to be any damn good. Does it have strong fundamentals? Does it have some sort of application? Does it have some sort of use case? Is it outside the bubble? Or are they just to the moon, deep, deep, deep? And then it's up to you what you do with that information. I'm not telling you what to do other than my call to action, which is really scrutinize why they're pitching this token. And I think you'll find if you're one that listens to those people, you'll find that the ones who have the most followers are the ones who lie to you the most. So then question, this is my second call to action, question why you trust them so fervently. See, I don't have a lot of followers. The reason I don't have a lot of followers is because I don't go after followers. I don't seek followers. I'm not excessively begging for followers. I don't need to. If I have good information, you'll spread the word and tell people, this guy's worth listening to. If I'm worth listening to, they'll subscribe. That's how I think about it. Because at the end of it, if I were to go and do the same thing they're doing, it would make me do better than them. Even though there's never been a time that I've ever told you that some project's going to be a thing, I might tell you, hey, if you want to roll the dice, that's a different thing. Or it's doing what they told me for now, but I can't tell you when it's going to not do what they're telling me. That's a different thing. At no point have I told you any of these or any kind of credible good. My Fave 5 even, there might have been concerns like we saw with Everrise. So that's my call for you guys. Be thinking about what you're told from whom and who's behind that person. Because a lot of these people with a lot of followers, it's two-part. One, if they do have a lot of money, they damn sure didn't make it trading cryptocurrency. They made it because they were paid to shill their crap to you. Two, in some cases, those followers were paid for. So just think about it. That's all. Consider that. And big picture, when we get into whatever this is going to look into for the next run, near the halving and shortly after, I suspect that we're not going to see significant upward movement again till shortly after the halving, at which point people calm down. And after tax season, I think that's when it'll start running up again. How high it goes, I don't know. But then start looking at some of the garbage that's coming out. Consider it. You know, consider, are they really pitching it because there's something to it, or are they pitching it just because it's a pump and dump and you could tell? Because remember, by the time they tell you about it, it's probably already too late. They probably waited until it's too late. They've bought enough bag that they can use you as a form of exit liquidity. If you're cool with that and you want to be the gambler, roll the dice, I can't tell you to do it with your money. I don't like seeing people who follow me getting ripped the hell off. So if you're that kind of person who appreciates such a thing, spread the word and tell other people so they don't get ripped off. But Hotep Jesus, check him out. He's on X. He's on YouTube. He's on Rumble, I think, even. But yeah, check him out. He has lengthy videos, and he is very down to earth, and he does a really good job breaking some of these things down that he's just spitballing on top of his head that I think are worth a listen. And then make your own decisions based on what you hear. Ultimately, you should not just blindly do what any of us say. I'm saying use the information to make your own decisions about what you're going to do, not just cryptocurrency, but in life in general, because you're going to feel better. You're going to feel much better than being led by the nose by these morons.